Dear friends, it'll be a phrase that I can play both at the beginning and the end for sure. What a friend we have in Jesus. Even in the closest relationships, we have trouble with our fickle emotions. We range all the way from love to hatred, even with close relationships. It is easy for us to go from being a friend to being a foe. And it is important for us to see how valuable it is to have a bond of love, of commitment, and of God's strength as we are going to talk about loyalty and jealousy. On page 11, the outline tells us about friendship as a gift from God that He nurtures. I ran across something written by a very highly published writer. He was talking about a flight that reinforced for him some research. It was during one of those flights, he looked over and recognized the man next to him was Bartolotto. Di Bartolotto was a very famous, wealthy construction manager in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. His son would own the 49ers for 23 years, but this was the father from Ohio. And in the early 80s was ranked as one of the 400 most affluent people in the United States, the richest people by Forbes magazine. So he struck up a conversation with him. They talked about all kinds of things. His interest was, how do you build a winning leadership team in a company? So he finally got to the point where he was ready to ask the question. He asked him, what's the single most important quality that you would find in a manager? And he said, the old, experienced, wizened contractor didn't hesitate. He said, loyalty. So I pressed him a little bit because in my research, loyalty can often be understood in the wrong way. You can assemble a team of yes men, people that agree with you, and you don't even get a contrast. You can't even get good answers. They're too loyal, you might say. But when they came right down to it, he said, in the bottom line, they have to be loyal enough to care about our business, to care about their performance, to care about me, and they have to be able to defend. That's what David and Jonathan did. As we turn to 1 Samuel 20, and we'll see that despite the risks involved, that Jonathan was willing to hold on to loyalty. And even when the outcome is not certain, we're not sure how it's going to turn out, we can remain loyal to God. A risk involved, Jonathan was going to be put to the test. You know, trust is a commodity in relationship. It's very precious. And it is very fickle. I used to teach that it takes a long time, years, to blow up that sphere of trust. Long-term developed relationship builds trust because you've proven that you're in this relationship for the other person's good. And it can take only 5 minutes for it to all be torn down, can it? A single word, an angry interaction, it might be a discovery of unfaithfulness, it might be that you've sided with another. And just like that, the trust can be torn in its fabric. And it can take a while to come back, if at all. You know, I've also discovered that you just don't have a button inside your soul that you can push that says trust. Yeah, I can ask you to trust me, but you are going to have to build that over time. You can risk with me, you can forgive me, but the trust takes time to grow. And this is the reason that promises and written agreements have to be there among human beings, because all of us have been untrustworthy at some point. And that's really kind of a sad commentary that in today's world, you can't just do a handshake, can you? You have to learn the hard way. You got to sign a contract and hold the person to the small print. And it can be very disillusioning to find out that somebody you thought was your close friend when it comes to business could backstab you. So this is a precious narrative between David and Jonathan about loyalty and friendship. Then David fled from Naioth at Ramah and went to Jonathan and asked, "What have I done? What is my crime? How have I wronged your father, Saul the king, that he is trying to take my life?" "Never," replied Jonathan. "You're not going to die. Look, my father doesn't do anything great or small without confiding in me. Why would he hide this from me? It is not so." Actually, David has to point out it is. In the in-between chapter, in chapter 19, David had won the hand of Michal. It would be a sister of Jonathan. He was given her in marriage and they were in love. Michal loved him enough to protect him. During the episode that Jonathan didn't know about, Saul had dispatched soldiers into the private chambers of David, and they came at the bed and attacked what they thought was David sleeping with swords and spears. Had Michal not prepared a sleeping person with other blankets and pillows while David snuck out the back and down a rope to the ground, David would have been dead. Jonathan didn't believe it was his dad. Jonathan said, "It can't be." So David took an oath. "Your father knows very well that I found favor in your eyes." He said to himself, "Jonathan must not know this, or he will be grieved. Yet as surely as the Lord lives, and as you live, there's only a step between me and death." Yeah. The reason he has to take it up a notch is because Jonathan wasn't hearing him. So David makes it an oath, and he says, I'm telling you, if you don't help me and guard my back, I'm going to get a spear in it." And then Jonathan says, "Whatever you want me to do, I'll do for you." There we see kind of a divided conscience and heart. In fact, Jonathan is torn between a father's love and his best friend. When David had come back from defeating Goliath, they became one in spirit, as we read. Jonathan had already built confidence and a covenant with David. "I will guard you if you will guard me." In fact, this is the crown prince who would probably be the most threatened by David, as though he were going to usurp the throne. Jonathan was okay because he knew that the Lord was with David. It's interesting, it can happen in real life, not that too distant of history. In Ethiopia, there was a man named Haile Selassie. He left the country as an emperor for just a short tour away, and while he did, the military tried to take over the company or the whole country. It was a military coup, and as things unfolded, they came and they took hostage Selassie's son. They held a gun to his head and said, "You need to give us the keys to the government, the radio, and any of the private details that you have, or you're going to die." He did that. And only a few hours after the coup was complete, Selassie was back in Ethiopia. He snuck in, had enough loyal soldiers, and he had overcome the coup and was back in charge. He called his son into the office, the presidential suite, and sat him down, and now was the moment of truth. And he asked him, "Son, why did you do it?" His son, affected by it, very emotional, said, "Dad, I had to. They had a gun to my head. I had no choice." And here's what the emperor said: "I'm glad that you're my son and that you are alive, but I would have been proud to have attended your funeral." You know what he meant by that? "I will never trust you again." And he never had him in a position of authority or of influence after that. I guess when it comes right down to it, when we say that we are a friend, we need to act like it and be that. Saul would kind of vacillate, and eventually it would crack all of his relationships. Jealousy would be there to the point where it would destroy him and even his kingdom. It would start to show up as they would return home. The celebration really was Saul's, because all of Israel was there giving him the glory. The ladies would come out to the field and they would talk about him. All the towns of Israel came out to meet King Saul with singing and dancing, with joyful songs, tambourines and lutes. What they were saying is that Saul had accomplished exactly what they wanted. They were safe under their king. Hurrah, we celebrate you. But here's where the twist began. As they arrived and the procession came in, we can call it a parade, a ticker tape type of parade like we've had when our victors come home. The ladies sang, Saul has killed his thousands, but David his 10,000s. And that's all he could hear. That's all he focused on, and it made him angry and jealous. Saul was very angry. This refrain galled him. What more can he get but my kingdom, he said. And from that time on, Saul kept a jealous eye on David. This is a call for a very bare honesty and a biblical inquiry. How jealous are we? And how often haven't we allowed jealousy to tear at the fabric of our relationships, even our relationship with God? Isn't it true that human beings get fearful? And in the fear, we guard almost too closely. Instead of trusting God and His loyalty, we try to manipulate the circumstances. It may be jealousy that has gotten you into so much trouble. It may be jealousy and fear and your own insecurity that is called color me green with envy in our language. Yes, there's a sixth commandment to guard marriage. There's a ninth and a tenth commandment to guard people from coveting. But jealousy and fear can lead to a displeasure with God's governing. And it means that we are the ones who want to run the show. And that's dangerous. What happened to Saul could happen to us. The next day, an evil spirit from God came forcibly upon Saul. He was prophesying in his house while David was playing the harp, as he usually did. Saul had a spear in his hand. And he hurled it, saying to himself, I'll pin David to the wall. But David eluded him twice. Can you imagine the scene? He likes his harpist, and he likes him so much he's going to skewer him with a spear. Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with David but had left Saul. See, there's the grievous sin. He was jealous of God's grace and blessing. And when you look around at another person and you think they're getting too much, they have too much prosperity, too much happiness, you know, we have a tendency to want to embarrass them, take it out on them. We have a tendency, instead of praying for their good, of hoping for their bad. Now, despite any of the outcomes that come, we can be faithful to God. Jonathan, caught between his father and his best friend, knows that his dad is attacking an innocent man. David does not deserve this. God is on his side. God has anointed him. It's Jonathan that sees that he's willing to give up the throne to David. David said, look, tomorrow is the new moon festival and I'm supposed to dine with the king, but let me go and hide in the field until the evening of the day after tomorrow. If your father misses me at all, tell him, David earnestly asked my permission to hurry to Bethlehem, his hometown, because an annual sacrifice is being made there for the whole clan. If he says, very well, then your servant is safe. But if he loses his temper, you can be sure that he is determined to harm me. As for you, Jonathan, your servant, for you have brought him into a covenant with you before the Lord. If I am guilty, then kill me yourself. Why hand me over to your father? Jonathan says, never. If I had the least inkling that my father was determined to harm you, wouldn't I tell you? The man after God's heart takes an oath with his best friend not to harm each other or their clan. Hope you remember this, because if you were to read all of Samuel, you'll hear how David does that very thing. God is going to destroy the line of Saul, and unfortunately, in the process, Jonathan is killed in battle. After which, then, David goes and scours the whole of the country to find offspring of Jonathan that he can defend. Instead of doing what the ancient kings would all do, wipe out the whole clan, he protected, and he did so until that person's end of life. That shows faithfulness, an agreement, a covenant, and friendship. "Come," Jonathan said, "let's go out into the field." So they went there. Then Jonathan said to David, "By the Lord, the God of Israel, I will sound out my father." Here's how they worked it out. It was such a dangerous situation for David now to be seen. He would be chased. He was in complete secrecy and hiding. That the only way that Jonathan could communicate was with arrows. He said, "If I shoot the arrows in your direction, go ahead and collect them and come at me because you're in complete safety. My father will not hurt you. But if I shoot him a long ways away, I'll send my servant after, and that will indicate that you are indeed in danger, and you need to run quickly." It's kind of sad how God had to expose the duplicity of the king. You see, Saul had begun to control his own destiny. He had a destructive plan that even Jonathan would not hear. When Jonathan asked him, "Are you trying to hurt David?" Saul's anger flared up at Jonathan, not just at David, but at Jonathan. And he said to him, "You son of a perverse and rebellious woman." I guess you can probably put it into your own vernacular. This was not pretty language. "Don't I know that you have sided with the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of the mother who bore you?" He's basically saying, "Jonathan, you're not my son. I won't claim you anymore. You're in trouble because you're with my enemy." And then he says, "Now send and bring David to me, for he must die." Whew! Did Jonathan get a dose of reality? Jonathan rose from the table in fierce anger, and he didn't eat for 2 full days because he was grieved. And then he went out and shot the arrows. He sent the servant after them so that they could have privacy for a brief moment. He would affirm his covenant with David, and the sadness would be that's the last time they talked to each other. "The Lord is witness between you and me and between your descendants and my descendants." David left, and Jonathan went back to the town. And they wept, but David wept the most. Isn't it interesting that sometimes friendship, commitment, faithfulness, even in marriage and family, can be strained to the nth degree? But I think we need to see that it affects our relationship with God. That betrayal is there and possible for every one of us. In Genesis 31, there's a Mizpah blessing. Here's how it reads. "May the Lord keep watch between you and me when we are away from each other. That our friendship holds, our loyalty remains. We've made a commitment to each other, and I trust my life to you no matter what." Isn't that what we need, even in our relationship with God? And do you recognize what was happening in the upper room? This whole episode in the life of David and Jonathan is like a fulcrum for the Gospels. Because Jesus is going to say to his disciples, "You're not just my slaves, my followers, my disciples. You are my friends. And I want you to do what I say. I acknowledge you before my Father." And then in the upper room, as Jesus would announce that one of you is going to betray me, instead of pointing at Judas or everyone else, every single disciple asks the question, "Is it I, Lord?" And you know why, don't you? Because of our tendency as human beings to try to handle it and get it in our own direction, because our trust is so low and our desire for control is so high. Every one of us has been betrayed, or maybe even worse, we have given others secrets up. And you know what? When we have made a vow, we need to value our word. We need to get back to where our handshake is good enough. But beyond that, you have to see when the devil is attacking. He's seeking isolation. He's trying to get us away from one another because there's strength in community and support. There's strength in family and faithfulness. And there's strength when we are true to our word and to God. You know there's strength in numbers. God plus one is a majority. And this lesson teaches us not just friendship, but it teaches us God's loyalty. Jesus is the one that would take it all the way to the end. His friendship would be committed to the point where His blood would be shed, that He might give to us the exact thing He vowed: forgiveness, trust, and the ultimate of loyalty. And if He is loyal to God the Father and loyal to us, we can always understand more what it means to be loyal. And even when we are not able to, or when we fail, God has forgiven. We come back to that bond of friendship with Jesus, and it straightens everything out. We believe that, and we hold that in the church, in the home, and in the world. We want to show the power of friendship with God. Amen.